Welcome to Embracing the Muse. I'm your host, Sally Jean Fox, the author of Meeting the Muse After Midlife. And I'm on a quest to discover and understand how we can live our richest, most meaningful, and creative lives at any age, and especially as we age. And I'll be interviewing island creatives to discover what they can share with us about the highs and lows, ups and downs, and possibilities of living and sustaining a creative life. I am so happy today to introduce you to Brooke Gassio, a professional artist living on Vashon. I met recently through the Vashon Center for the Arts, VCA. Brooke and I started talking. I was intrigued by her background, and she invited me to visit her studio before this interview. And I came away, well, first of all, it was a great visit, Brooke. Thank you so much. Loved visiting your studio. And I thought, oh, I wish I could visit the studios of all the artists that I've interviewed before I interview them. Because it's like being able to be invited into your private world. I felt like I was sitting in the womb of creativity, which seemed all the more appropriate given your art that often, has focused often on women, women's bodies, women's reproduction. And so I got to look at your beautiful paintings on the wall and see pictures of some of the installations you've done and see your gorgeous watercolors and the card series that you made from them, all because I could just sit there. So thank you so much for the invitation.
Absolutely. Thank you for coming. It was a joy to have you there.
It was great. And it's also, it's a little weird here on the radio to be talking about art as a visual medium because you can't really convey what it's like, but we try. And since I got to sit there and be in your womb, I feel like I have a sense for it that I might not otherwise have. So it was really super cool. You told me, well, first of all, you've been on the island since 2021, and you moved here from Austin, Texas.
That's great.
Ian Moore country.
Yay. Yes. In fact, Ian's wife and I went to high school together.
I love that. I love the Vashon Austin connection that is here now. You said that earlier in your career, you went to art school. You went to art school at the University of Texas, and you also became a massage professional and did massage. And that really interested me because looking at your gorgeous pictures of women, it felt like you had a real sense for bodies.
Yes, I was a massage therapist for 20 years.
Oh, my gosh.
It sustained me during my years of being a single mother and an artist. It provided a flexible schedule so that I could see clients, also have time to get into the studio before I picked my kids up at 3 o'clock. I'm not quite sure how I juggled all of that, but I did. But yes, the knowledge of the body definitely plays into the work that I'm doing now. And also helping people release emotions that are held in the body also speaks to the work that I'm doing now.
It was as if I both saw that you were representing women, women's bodies, but there was a feel to it. It was almost, it was lovely and disconcerting because there was a realness that sometimes one doesn't feel looking at women's bodies. For example, we've all seen the beautiful nudes that were painted by classical artists. And they always look like looking at the women's bodies from the outside in, like a thing that
they're being objectified.
They're objectifying and they're honoring, but in that distant way. But when I look at your art, it feels like there's an inside out quality, that you're representing the woman's body from the point of view of a woman who has a body, who knows what it's like to give birth to two children.
Yes, I'm so glad that you can see that in the work. That is definitely what I'm trying to convey. I have studied the body from a massage therapist's point of view and, literally released muscles in a very physical way. But I also feel that we hold emotion in the body as well, and that we need to work with that to, like, in a massage context, release that emotion that's stored in the body. But also talk about that. And so whenever we are, throughout art history, you see many, many, many examples of women in art, and they're often the subject matter of the art. And so I want my work to express what it is to live within a woman's body, to come from the woman's perspective and give that context. And in my opinion, there's not enough work about what it's like to give birth, what it's like to have breast cancer, what it's like to lose parts of your body, what it's like to heal, and what it's like to have joy in your body. So I want to express all of that through the paintings.
Yeah, I love that. It feels like a huge missing that maybe isn't missing as much anymore. But I remember when Ann Leda Shapiro is an artist on the island I interviewed as well, and she was part of the original Gorilla Girls. In New York, wearing the gorilla mask and pointing out to the art, the owners of galleries and museums and what all, that there were, that women were being objectified. They were the nude bodies on the canvases, but they weren't the artists being allowed into the exhibits.
Yes, and I got to see the Gorilla Girls.
You did?
At the Venice Biennale when I studied in Italy in college, and I've always been a fan. Does she still live on the island?
Oh, she's on the island, and she's one of the few. The Gorilla Girls were anonymous. That was part of the club. And they wore those gorilla suits. That was kind of funny.
Yeah.
But she was given permission to admit that she was one of the original Gorilla Girls, so she can talk about it. And she doesn't say a lot, but, I'm so, in awe of what they did and the in-your-face in a comic way to the industry. But now it feels like women, because it's a touchy thing. You think about art, you want it to be beautiful and uplift the spirit, but a lot of our lives are about blood and menstruation and giving birth and miscarriages and knives that cut out parts of ourselves and what we go through when we go through cancer, which is so grueling. And all that is so real.
Absolutely. And if you look at the images in the media, you'd never know it. We're often told how to look, how to feel, even
right.
How to behave. And so I this work for me is bringing to life, bringing on to the outside what we're experiencing on the inside.
And just so that people know, because you're also going to have your art on display during the studio tour at the Hub Center.
Yes.
And downtown Vashon. So everybody can come and actually see this. We're talking about women's bodies, but it's actually quite lovely work. So she has spared us the grueling ripped apart, like Frida Kahlo did when she was describing what it was like to be in a deformed and maimed body. It's pretty chilling, but your work doesn't confront in that way that is not in that way. It confronts a little, but it also welcomes us. It does both. So
I try to strike a balance there.
I think that's really important, and I think you do a good job. And I know that we were talking when I visited your studio about being at art school and how many art schools, including the University of Texas, where you were, are promoting conceptual art, art that comes with packing a meaning or making a point, art that is maybe interesting as an idea, but not necessarily anything that you'd want to bring into your house, and not designed for that, because a lot of conceptual art is installation art that goes in public spaces or in galleries or in museums. So that was your background. And you started out doing installation art.
Yeah. In college, during my BFA at UT Austin, I was exposed to a lot of conceptual art. And in fact, the year that I left UT, they were taking out the ceramics department and the metals department and putting in 3D printers.
Really?
So it was really at this moment where things were changing a lot. And I did study video art and sculpture along with painting and drawing. And when I went to Italy, I saw at the Venice Biennale.
Because you were in a residency in Italy. I just want to clarify for people.
Yeah, actually, I studied
in Italy. Oh, you studied first, and then you went
to my last year of school. I received a scholarship to do that. It was incredible. But I came home filled with ideas based around installation. And so I was taking video projections and projecting them into everyday objects such as cribs and bathtubs. But yes, you're right. That work is really hard to place in someone's home. It pretty much has to exist in a gallery or a museum. And that work is really powerful, and I have a love for that work. But I also want to make work that people can live with. And I also love drawing and painting. And painting figurative work. So that's what I'm trying to do now, is kind of marry both of those sides, the concept with the figurative naturalistic work.
Yeah. And if anybody's out there wondering, okay, well, but what does that look like? Brooke has a lovely website. You can go to brookegassio.com, and I'll leave that in the show notes for Embracing the Muse. But go look at her site. It's beautiful, and it'll give you an idea of some of these really stunning installations, you know, where
you could
see, I love the one that you had a baby projected into, was it a crib?
Yeah. Into a crib. Yeah.
So you were bringing video and physical objects together in a space that allowed you to see the relationship with a child differently than you normally would.
Yeah. And the show that I'm working on right now, which I don't have a venue for yet, but I'm in the process of submitting this body of work to be shown, is 9 large paintings and then 4 video installations, as well as my cyanotypes. So it'll be a body of work. When it's completed, I'm about 3/4 of the way through this body of work, and then I'll start submitting it. And I chose to work that way because in the past I've had a show that I was working towards, and this time I really wanted to have this body of work feel really complete before I started submitting it. So I didn't feel that outside pressure. I wanted to be ready.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. And cyanotype, for anyone like me who might not have known what that means, is a form of printing with a beautiful...
Yeah, it's a photographic print using the sun. And so if you think back to like childhood projects where you did sun prints, it's very similar to that. There's a blue and white tone to the entire cyanotype.
Yeah, they're really stunning. And you'll have those at your show. Yeah.
Yes. I made 6 of these cyanotypes, and I actually showed them at the VCA this last summer. So some of you may have seen them there.
Okay.
And I made those during my residency in Spain in the spring. And they're meant to be compositional sketches, if you will, for the larger paintings.
Right. Does it ever, I mean, because University of Texas Art School was focused on concept and installation, and it sounds like increasingly leaving the physicality materials of sculpture and stuff for preparing people for the high-tech and digital world, as well, which is both important to do, but there's something about the physicality that's always gone with making art, and you feel like, you know, don't we need that too? Don't we need to have immersion in our senses and the physicality and in the materials to really...
Yeah, I play back and forth between those two a lot. I mean, you know, back to Duchamp saying that a urinal is art.
Yeah, you know, he was the one who broke the mold of art by... putting was it his name or a word on a urinal?
It was Armut. Is what
Armut.
He put on it.
Yeah, and then that became a piece of art, and the art world really changed as a result, for better or for worse, some would say, you know.
Yeah.
But that did open up the whole world of concept art in a different way.
Which to me, in a lot of ways, can make sense in my work, because if it's a found object that has an energy imbued in it already, and there's a story that goes into that, like the a bathtub, for example. We all know what that is. There's already a language built into it. And if you can play and layer up on that, you're using that almost as your material, as your medium to convey whatever it is you're trying to convey. So that makes a lot of sense to me. But I do love process, like you're saying, and I love painting. I love observing. I love translating through my hands. And so I like to strike a balance between those two as much as I can by pulling in the objects, but also playing with them and manipulating them.
You also do beautiful watercolors that are sort of in a different mood because you do flowers and you've produced a line of cards using those watercolors. They're just lovely. People can come and buy tons of them. You know, it's really great. But was there a little voice in your head that said, you're not supposed to be making pretty things. You're not supposed to paint flowers anymore. You know, is that voice?
Well, when we moved here to Vashon in 2021, we were coming out of the pandemic, or we were still in it, really. But during the pandemic, I started painting flowers and painting these gorgeous flowers that are growing in my garden here on Vashon. And I, for the longest time, just kind of fought myself about it, thinking, like, this feels so good to paint these beautiful flowers. But that at the same time, just like, what does it mean, though? Because I had come out of this this practice of making really conceptual work. But it was the pandemic. It was joyful. I needed joy. We all needed joy. So I just let myself do it. And I made 50 flower paintings. And then I was like, now what? And really wasn't quite sure what I was going to do with it. But after sitting on them for a little while, realized, maybe these would be good greeting cards. And so I started making these greeting cards and then stickers and then finally into calendars. And they're just joyful pieces that really don't have much meaning other than that they're from observation and they're beautiful, but they're shareable. They're easily shareable. And so I've made this line that I call Fairy Kiss Studio. And that's
what it's become. Lovely. And they also relate to another line of inquiry I want to ask you about, which is how one supports oneself as a full-time artist. Because I interviewed Mike Levitt a little while ago and listened to his talk at the Vashon Center for the Arts. And I asked Mike, what advice would you give to art students these days? And his advice is go to business school. And we laughed because I've gone to business school and I'm not necessarily convinced that's the path for artists, you know. But what I think he was trying to say is you have to have your feet on the ground about making a living if you want to be a full-time professional supporting yourself. So that takes me back to the greeting cards, because it feels like there's creativity and there's creativity about designing your life so that you can be creative, you know?
Yes.
And that is actually quite a feat, trying to figure out how to make it all work.
It really is. I have struggled my way through this question. And as I shared earlier, I was a massage therapist for 20 years. When the pandemic hit, I closed my private practice in Austin and we moved. So that I retired fully from that profession. And I decided that I wanted to have both feet in the arts when I moved.
Which is incredible. And I just want to applaud it and say that's so brave and so wonderful. And we need that. So tell me more.
Well, it is hard. It is hard to put both feet in because the arts are tricky. Everyone knows that. It's hard to make a living as an artist. So for me, this greeting card line is kind of one avenue and that gives me the means in order to paint and work with subject matter that's kind of difficult to work with and maybe not consumable in the same way that a greeting card or a calendar is.
Mm-hmm.
But this work is really important to me and I want to be able to create it without feeling shy about the subject matter. I want to talk about whatever I need to talk about in that work. And so I'm able to do that.
Yeah, and I think that's a brilliant combination. One of the things that I've been thinking about, Brooke, because I was so moved by the card that was on your table that said, I am a full-time artist. And I was really moved by that, not only because you had the courage to say that, but there was something in it. It just moved me. Like, here's a woman who has the courage to say, I am. And a lot of times, I mean, there are very few of us who are going to be full-time artists. That's a big deal. Mm-hmm. And it's a professional commitment and all. But it made me wonder, what does it take to just say, I am in anything? You know, what does it take to say, I am an artist? Because it feels like in our world, often the world wants to tell you what you get to be, you know, what you are. You know, you can be an artist because you went to art school and you have a BFA, but you didn't, so you're not really an artist. And that with all sorts of occupations. So sometimes for me, it comes down to what gives us joy. You know, how do we interact with what we love? And where do we find that essential place that nobody gets to dictate for us? You know, it's either we love it or it's ours. So does art give you joy?
Absolutely. Art is the only place for me where just time just stands still, where nothing else matters, where I'm just in the zone. That's what art does for me. And so, yeah, that's a place of extreme. It's the flow state, as they say, but it's where I'm just in touch with whatever it is that I'm creating, whether it's looking at a flower and recording every single detail of what I'm looking at, or whether it's an idea that I'm trying to pull out and put out onto paper.
You know, one of the things that I loved about learning a little bit about your creative life was that you actually give yourself a schedule. And you have 2 days a week that are your admin days, where you handle the business of art and life. And then you give your 3 days in the studio. And I thought, that is so powerful, because how many people say they want to make art, but they never give themselves time in the studio? And you give yourself days.
Yeah, I've learned that over time, that I have to guard that time.
Right.
And if I don't, I know that life will just eat up all of that time. And, you know, I've worked for other people and I've worked for myself, and I know the difference. And when you're working for other people, you know, you have to be available to
right.
whatever the situation needs. And so to be in the studio, there's this real guarding of that space that I have to do in order to make sure that I can get into that zone and stay there.
Yeah.
And in fact, I have a little figure that I have at my studio door that's a little wolf, and she's my guardian for my studio.
Yeah.
And that's to anyone. That's to my children. You know, I have to set aside time away from my children. My children are grown now, but my husband, my parents, you know, other life responsibilities, you know, you have to really draw a boundary in order to get in that zone, because even just the smallest thing will pull me out whenever I'm trying to create. It'll just, someone comes and asks me a question. All of a sudden, I've lost all that momentum that it took to get in deep inside of that space where I'm able to, like, really be creating what I want to create.
I think that's so important. And I'm always looking in these interviews for clues that we can share with others, you know, and I think you're offering an important one, which is that there's a kind of sacred space that allows you to get into the flow. And it's not everyday space. I mean, some of us can sit in a cafe and draw and, you know, it works fine, but there's that deeper space, and it requires boundaries, and it requires stepping out of the ordinary world and not inviting the ordinary world to be sending you messages or knocking at the door, or asking what you want for dinner, or remind you the taxes are due, and, you know, it's all that stuff.
In fact, I have a box outside, which I forgot to tell you about this, but I have a box outside my studio door that I put my phone in.
Because, oh my gosh.
Every ding, you know,
are committed.
Takes you out.
That is so true. That is so true. And, you know, a lot of people ask, okay, how do I get over, you know, creative blocks? And yet we're so wedded to being on that other track all the time and kind of tethered to our phones. You're making me think, because I do bring my phone into the studio, you know, and I will see a message, but then I'm thinking, is that pulling me out? You know, is that something that will detract from the greater flow?
Yeah.
And I guess we all find it for ourselves, but still, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. And also that momentum that
the momentum
build up. Yeah, it takes so much time and cultivation to get to that place. And so that's also why I like my admin days to be on separate days from my creating days, because it just comes from a really different place when I'm to respond to other people's needs or to, you know, social media or my website or kind of more computing types of things.
Well, it's a different brain space. I know I am taking a drawing class with our wonderful Bruce Morser on the island. Oh. And Bruce has said, you know, that when he's in the midst of drawing, he can't drive a car. You know, it's like he is using a different side of his brain, and he can't do that other stuff. And I know I've been with massage professionals who've basically said, you know, like, write your check before the session begins, because they will be in an altered space and it will be really hard to go back into the logistics and money and all that stuff, because it requires a different part of our brain. So I applaud that you figured that out. And now for people to have an experience of you, are you going to be at the hub is, it's sort of in the land of Voice of Vashon. It's on the highway, right?
It's directly across from Snapdragon in the new event space. There will be 5 artists at the hub, and there will be information about the Viva Tour and a gallery with the artists, those 5 artists work up. And so there'll be a restroom, you know, phones. And so if you need anything along the tour or just want to come see the work, that's a great spot.
Well, mostly go see the work. And then if you need a place to charge your phone along the way, you can do that too and all. But I also wanted to mention, as we start to wrap up, that you have been a contributor to the art scene here on the island, and both by participating in Vashon Island Visual Artists, but also because you help hang the shows at VCA, which is an art form.
It has been so fun to be a part of the installation team and help Lin-Ann and Paul down at the VCA every month hang the different shows. And it's a lot of fun. I used to run a gallery in Austin. We started a 20-artist art gallery that is still running called Icosa. And so I got a lot of practice hanging shows during that time. And so it translated really perfectly into helping the VCA.
Oh, that is such a great contribution. I interviewed Lin-Ann Polite some months ago and realized that we walk into those spaces, those gallery spaces, and we think about the art. We don't really think about the placement or the hours that it takes. But when I did my little show in town, my husband had to be my, you know, gallery assistant, and there weren't that many pieces, and it took hours to get them all arranged and presentable and have a sense of flow. And so the fact that you understand that, it's an art form.
It really is.
It's a great contribution.
It's a lot of fun.
Yeah. And I should have mentioned just in sharing a teeny bit about your bio that you do have that experience of, you know, supporting 2 galleries in Austin, and one that you founded and another you were part of. Is that right?
One I founded with 20 other artists. There was a shortage of art spaces in Austin at the time, and we decided to just make our own gallery. And we had monthly shows with our artist members, but also with the community at large. And so we would curate shows and show our own work. And it's still going strong in Austin. It's a great gallery, great space. And the other one that I was part of was Texas Sculpture Group. And we had shows all over Texas with sculptors. And we were one of the affiliates to the International Sculpture Center.
Wow.
And I was the membership coordinator for that group of 150 artists. So it was quite a job.
And those are important contributions because, you know, again, we think about art, you think about making art, but then there's also how do artists get seen and in what kind of venues do they get seen? And there are only so many, you know, of a certain kind of gallery, and they're often controlled by certain forces that are, you know, consumer driven and, yeah, and not necessarily receptive to the kinds of art that artists want to show. And so having an artist-determined gallery.
Yes.
It was fabulous.
It really allowed us to have our own voice in the art scene and to be able to have more control over what we wanted to show. And it didn't necessarily have to be commercially viable. We were self-funded. We had a membership due that we would pay. And we used volunteers ourselves to put on the shows. But it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, well, I want to just close by acknowledging some things that I've learned from you that I think are really super important. One is just what you were just saying, that part of the role of the artist is to look at how art gets shared in the community. And that isn't just wishful thinking. You know, you were actually out there contributing, making it happen. And then also the way that you've been able to balance the different art interests that you have, to still love installation and the sculptural work, but feel the freedom to do these beautiful paintings of women, to do the work with video, but also to work manually, to create a card line that gives you kind of hopefully a steady income and that will support you in doing things that may never be consumable by others. And then to have the courage, and this is the one that I want to end on, to be able to say, I am a full-time artist, and nobody else gets to say those words. You know, those are the words that you say to yourself every morning, whether it's I'm a full-time artist, I'm an artist, for others it might be I'm a creator, I'm a writer, I'm a poet, and to realize that we are the ones who take charge of those words. But it takes courage and perseverance to really hold on to them and trust what we believe and then make it real. So thank you so much for sharing a bit of your story.
Thank you, Sally. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks so much for listening. I look forward to being back soon and bringing you another conversation with an island creative who can show you how it's possible to embrace your muse and live your richest and most creative life. Till then, thanks for joining us, and thanks to Voice of Vashon, 101.9 FM, for hosting this show. I'm your host, Sally Fox, and I look forward to being with you soon.